Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. When it comes to food, Americans seem to have a pretty great deal. Our grocery stores are overflowing with countless varieties of convenient products. Over time, the system has encouraged us to know less and less about where our food comes from and permitted us to expect more food with less effort. But this illusion of endless abundance is about to be shattered. Today we talk with Kevin Walker, whose new book, The Grand Food Bargain and the Mindless Drive for More, looks at the global consequences of America's modern food system, from polluted rivers and seas to human health crises and disappearing species. Kevin grew up farming and has seen almost every facet of agriculture firsthand, working in agribusiness at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, overseas with international nonprofits, and as a professor at Michigan State University. Kevin, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you, Barbara. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I want to start with one of the very last lines in your book. You say at the very end that food has been our greatest teacher, and I wanted to know what you mean by that.
If we look back in history, almost everything that we've accomplished has been through food. Our ability to cooperate with each other in order to bring down bigger game came because of food. Our moving into community and setting up informal norms of how to govern amongst us came through food. Science started by observing where food came from and how to turn that into an increase in food that was out there. So all of these things have been the result of allowing food to be our greatest teacher.
Well, you describe, interestingly, in the book, you kind of compare the way that we relate to food with the way that other animal species relate to food. And it seems that it's actually food is the greatest teacher for just about every species of animals. But what distinguishes our relationship to food with, let's say, that of large cat predators and other large predators?
That's a very good question, Barbara. And it really comes down to what we have had is the ability to increase the availability of food on a continual basis. We can look at what's happening in the future and bring that back to our present actions, and then from there decide how we can take more positive steps in order to increase that. So it's that foresight that has proven pivotal in our ability to do it. And then there's been other things as well. We learned how to use fire. I mean, we are the only species alive that had not just benefits from fire, but knows how to control fire. We developed language, another one of those things that food helped us to be able to accomplish. And that language set up the precision that science needs. And then we also developed memory, and that memory allowed us to transfer the experience on how to survive and how to overcome food scarcity, the ups and downs of climate and temperature from one generation to the next. So those things together set us up on a path that allowed us to be able to actually increase the amount of food that was around us.
I'm curious, how did our relationship to food help us to or require us to develop language?
Because in order to be able to cooperate, in order to be able to live in community, in order to be able to establish how all of those things happen, we needed forms of how to communicate outwardly with each other. And so it was a slow and gradual process of being able to do that and to advance along that way. But that's in short how we were able to.
Well, last night I was watching this film called The Lion in Your Living Room, and actually we were watching it with our cats, who were very fascinated by the film. And there was a big section in the film about how cats are predators and the trouble with keeping your cats indoors because they still have this calling to be predators. And that's why they kill birds and that's why they kill mice. And it's not just because they are being playful and wasteful and mercilessly like decimating songbird populations, but that they have this drive to kill and to feed themselves. Well, we also were once predators in the same way, even though we use tools as opposed to our claws and our mouth to kill our prey. I'm wondering if there's a similar disconnect that house cats have with their predator trait that we humans have now that we get all our food from the supermarket as opposed to going out and hunting for it.
I like what you've said right there, because I think it's very important. We get our food from supermarkets and restaurants, as you've just said, but our food comes from nature and the environment. And when we forget about that and we begin to put more confidence in what exists that's around us, then in some ways we become our own worst enemy. And that some ways is we begin to look as if food is there, that food exists for us, that we form expectations that says, I want food to be available within a few minutes of where I live or where I work. I expect food to be there if I have money, and if I want more money or want more food, I bring more money. So those sorts of disconnects are really pivotal to what I'm talking about in the book, because as we continue down that path, we start living as if food will never run out, or that food is under our control. And that's the opposite mindset of when food and scarcity dominated everyday life.
Well, it's an interesting line earlier in your book where you talk about how for most of human existence, which has been, I guess humans are about, what, several hundred thousand years, but people of our forebears are 2 million years, that food was also always scarce, and life was basically a struggle to overcome the scarcity of food. But in the last 150 years or so, we've conquered food scarcity. Now, food is abundant, but in fact, the abundance of food is something that we're not able to cope with either. And what did you mean by that?
Well, you know, we were able to overcome that and create abundance. But within a matter of decades, what we were doing was producing more than what we needed, even in as an abundant state. And so then the next state is we created glut. And that happened within decades. And you can see signs of that glut from our actions to begin as a colony, to begin taking other colonies, which what we did was with Puerto Rico and Guam and the Philippines. Hawaii was that same year. Part of the justification for that came from the Industrial Revolution, but part of it also came that some of these places, like the Philippines, could serve as a launching board to move our food into China and other places like that. So we had glut, and we recognized that glut as early as the 1920s. But we didn't stop there and say, you know, we need to move off of this and see if we can manage abundance. We just continued with that, and from glut that then led to waste. And waste is between retailers and consumers, we will waste up to 40% of food. If you add that waste over time, what is happening is that that waste is beginning to erode the very forces that once gave us abundance. And as those forces erode, the next step is an eventual return back to scarcity.
Now, how does that happen?
Well, let's back up a second and just talk about the food system, because the food system is really kind of the execution of the grand food bargain. And what the food system does, and you talked about cats, it combines our biological drive for food. We're born hardwired to seek after food with resources like land and water, government policies, science, and markets. And that's the food system. That's how it works. If you notice of those factors that I listed, everyone but the first one are our choices. And they happen through our individual actions. So it's our choice if we treat finite resources like land and water and petroleum as if they're infinite. And it's our choice if we go along with the subsidies and protections that come through the government that we all helped establish and maintain. And it's our choice what expectations we hold of science and technology. And we are the ones who establish what a market economy is. And it's our choice whether we let that market economy decide our values. So those are the forces that keep the food system that upholds the grand food bargain. And what we have noticed with each of those is the erosion as to what they do. And as they erode the ability of the food system to continue to support our grand food bargain will change.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking with Kevin Walker, who's author of The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More. And now we're going to talk along with John, who's across the, on the other side of the air booth from me. We're waving to each other. And John is here to tell you about our pledge drive, which if you haven't noticed, we are starting the pledge drive, the spring pledge drive today. And actually, this is the first time this show has ever been the kickoff for the pledge drive. So it's a great way to start by having you, the listener, become part of us, the community here and the community radio, and help support us by becoming a member of KBOO.
Barbara, thank you. This is a fascinating interview with Kevin Walker and author of The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More. Looking forward to hear more of this interview. This is KBOO, and as Barbara mentioned, we are starting off our membership drive, and the best way to start that off is with a good start. And we know that you want to keep programs like this on your radio, programs like Locus Focus. So please call 877-500-5266 right now. 877-500-KBOO by 877-500-5266. And if you give a contribution of $60 or $5 a month, there will be a thank you gift for you. And that's this book that Kevin Walker has written called The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More as a thank you gift. So if you call now, you will get that. Again, that phone number is 877-500-5266.
And I might add, actually, that there's also a website you can go to, which is the KBOO website, kboo.fm. And when you go to the homepage, you'll be directed how to make a donation to KBOO right away, before you get to find out what's the rest of what's on the website. And I want to throw that out particularly. I know that this show has listeners all over the Northwest. I spend a lot of time traveling around the Northwest, and I know that there's a lot of people out there who are listening to us on your computers. Either you're listening live right now, streaming it, or you're going to be listening to the podcast later on this afternoon or next week sometime. So I want to put a call out to not just Portland area listeners, but to people stretching up and down the West Coast who are listening to us online at kboo.fm. Become a member right now by going to well, actually, you're on us already. So go up to the place where you make that donation and become a member of KBOO. And again, as John mentioned, for $60, you can get a copy of this book, The Grand Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More by Kevin Walker. And it's a book I find, when people ask me what I was reading, I said, I'm reading this book about everything, because it's really about how our food system is about everything. And that's kind of like what KBOO is about, wouldn't you say, John?
I would. And I was that line that Kevin mentioned, that 40% of our food is just wasted. It was incredible. And how this is serious. This is life and death stuff. And please call us at 877-500-5266 to be on the side of life here. And thank you. We've got something. Oh, I get to ring the cowbell. Woo, woo,
woo.
Ray is renewing from Vancouver, Washington. Thank you, Ray. And Joe also renewing from Northeast Portland. So thank you all, both of you, for your contribution to KBOO. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. And as we said, a gift of a contribution of $60 will give you a thank you gift of this book, The Grand Food Bargain, The Mindless Drive for More. Locus Focus is an important program here at KBOO, one of the many that talks about the seriousness of our ecology, of our home, of our earth home, and what it means to be earthlings on earth. And I so appreciate, Barbara, your work and your interviews and your great show here. And thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And I'm thinking about, I really appreciate the great listeners. In fact, this is a little known secret, but Locus Focus was actually named by a listener many, many years ago. Hmm. I put a call out on the show. This is when I think I was still on in the afternoon on Mondays or Wednesdays or something. And I put a call out because the show had some really lame name. And I said, this show needs a name. So I got a letter from somebody who suggested I call it Hocus Pocus Locus Focus. So I left off the Hocus Pocus part. I thought Locus Focus really sums up what this show is about. And so I really appreciate that listener who came up with the name. And I feel like it's listeners that make KBOO. And that it's listeners who, we're here for you and you're here for us. And this is what community radio is really about. And we really need you right now to go to your phone or pick it out of your pocket or wherever it is and call us 877-500-5266. And that's 877-500-5266. Become a member of KBOO. You can also, as I mentioned earlier, you can join online by going to kboo.fm and click on the donate. I believe that comes up before you even can get to the homepage right now. At least that's the way it was in every other pledge drive recently. So it's very easy on the website to become a member. And either way, we have all this kind of high-tech stuff going on in the pledge Central, where John is located right now, where when you either call in or you join by on the website, electronically, we're going to know immediately, and so we can thank everybody who joins. And that's a very big part also of this pledge drive is thanking you. But you need to thank us right now by calling 877-500-5266 for all the everything that KBOO gives you that makes your life fuller and that makes Portland the place that it is. And we are probably in the forefront of keeping Portland weird.
That's right. And the thank yous just keep on coming, because if you give a donation of $60 or $5 per month, you'll get a thank you gift. And that is Kevin Walker's book, The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More. Kevin is going to be on in just a minute. We're going to continue this interview that Barbara has with Kevin about this important issue regarding food and human life. And our phone number to call to donate, to participate in keeping programs like Locus Focus going is 877-500-5266. So please pick up the phone and call us, 877-500-5266. Go online at kboo.fm. And thank you for supporting your community radio station.
And thank you, John, for helping us to keep KBOO weird and to keep KBOO really strong. And again, the number to call is 877-500-5266. Become a member of KBOO right now. And for, again, a $60 pledge, you can get a copy of Kevin Walker's book, The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More, which is what we're talking about. So again, we're talking with Kevin Walker this morning, whose new book, The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More, looks at the global consequences of our very kind of convoluted food system. Kevin, you call the book the Grand Food Bargain, and you sort of suggested before we were talking about raising money for KBOO about what that food bargain is. But I wanted to know exactly what is this food bargain and what is being bargained away at the same time that we get as a benefit of it, abundant food whenever we want it?
Sure. So the Grand Food Bargain, it marks a new relationship to food. So we know that at one point we were hunters and gatherers, and then 10,000 years ago we became farmers. And originally we were headed in the direction of becoming a nation of farmers. But what happened was, along that way, as we advanced in our ability to increase the amount of food, we began to see that we didn't all have to be responsible to produce our own food. And in fact, we came to expect more food for less effort. So we became a nation of consumers for the first time. And those who remained to produce that food, they changed their model on how they farmed in order to specialize in pumping out ever greater volumes of food, particularly calorie-dense foods. And they did that in exchange for greater profits. Now, if we look at this, what happened was that it brought us unprecedented benefits. There never had been so much food so readily available. We were no longer tied to being on farms. If we wanted to be artists or athletes, we could. If we didn't want to even harvest our own food or bother to pick it up, that could be arranged. If we didn't want to cook it, we didn't have to do any of that. So all of that was new and unusual, and it increased our possibilities, our time for leisure, all of these things. But then there were some other unforeseen consequences that came with it that we didn't think that much about at the beginning. And the obvious one is our own health. So if we compare our health to peer countries, in terms of wealth, we're at or near the top. And in terms of health, we're at the bottom. So we eat more food, we spend less on food, but we spend more on health care. And we are dead last when it comes to chronic food-related diseases like obesity and diabetes and heart disease. Another way is, if we look at the food system that I talked about, that food system has now become a primary contributor of pollutants in streams and waterways and heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere. It's a major user of fossil energy and cheap labor. But there's also less visible costs. For example, the Grand Food Bargain favored larger farms and food businesses, which over time has helped to hollow out rural America, and which has led to fewer economic opportunities and viable communities, including schools and hospitals. And there's one other factor as well that I want to mention, and that is, while we were busy changing food to be more abundant, food was changing us. And we began to see access to food as this simple transaction in exchange for money. And the significance of how food was changing us either passed over us or it seemed unimportant.
So I'm thinking about how I grew up kind of right after World War II, and that in my youth, there was still some connections between the city and the farm. I remember my father would take me out to this cornfield, which was actually our corn farm that was just maybe 3 miles from our house. And we lived pretty close to downtown in this small city in New England. And we'd go buy our corn fresh. It was just picked. And so I grew up with this taste of really fresh corn and knowing that corn was something you didn't have sit in the refrigerator or in a supermarket shelf for days and days. But there was still, my father would talk about how when he was growing up, there were farms between the town we lived in and Boston, which was 40 miles to the east. And it was really hard for me to wrap my brain around what it was like to have farms surrounding a city. Then I moved to Portland in 1971, and Portland was a city that was ringed by farms, and there were farms within just a few miles of downtown Portland, especially dairy farms, but a lot of different kinds of ways. And I was really struck by how the food that I was eating in Portland, and I was also shopping at a food co-op, which was kind of a new experience. And so the food was really fresh. The food was local. I felt really connected to the food. And a lot of people in Portland were growing gardens. So this is, we're talking now about 47, 48 years ago. Things have really changed since then, but there's still remnants, I think, of those memories. And I wonder if you're in touch with people that are still trying to bring us back to a place where we have that kind of connection with food.
Yes, I am. And I continue to talk with them. In fact, from here, I was just talking with one yesterday. And part of their challenge is they don't see those opportunities and the independence that once existed, because I, like you, can relate back to that, because I grew up on a farm, and I remember tasting fresh sweet corn, and tomatoes had more flavor. And peaches, when they were picked at just the right time, could not have been sweeter. And others would come to our farm and they would gather some of that, or there would be roadside produce stands, and all of that has more or less disappeared. And the ones that are still left that are trying to make it, what they're struggling with is where's the opportunity that is out there? Because as we've become bigger and as we have put the emphasis on size and on scale, those opportunities have slowly started to move away, and they're not there like they once used to be. And trying to compete against the larger ones, so I was talking with a dairy farmer in Wisconsin. He said, I've been a dairy farmer for over 40 years, and it's been mostly on small farms. And what I notice happening is that banks aren't loaning money to smaller farmers because they don't think they'll make it, because they don't have the size of operation in order to make it. And so the only ones that can buy those farms are the larger ones. So the larger ones are getting bigger, and the smaller ones, the young people that are wanting to get into it, they're not able to do that. Well, the answer as to why that is still traces back to the forces that drive our food system. And one of those forces is we have a food system that's built around turning out quantity, energy-dense calories. That's what it's about. That's the model they're out there. And they do that around a handful of plants and animals, an endless combination of sugars, fats, salts, and artificial flavorings. And because that is what the reward is, and that's where the subsidies or the exemptions from laws are targeted, it makes making it in that world all the more different, all the more difficult. And so the only way for them is to find specialty niches, and food co-ops are an excellent example that afford people the chance to do that. On the consumer side, it's being able to see food beyond just a transaction, because the way it's now, it is now. We're hungry, we stop, we pick up food, we pay for it, we eat, we repeat. We see food as a transaction. We don't see a relationship to food in, as we started this conversation, of what food can teach us. And so we just continue to repeat and repeat that first cycle. And in the end, what we're doing is returning ourselves faster and faster to eventually meet back up again with scarcity.
Well, one of the things that kind of has alarmed me for many years, actually, I felt like I was pretty blessed living in Oregon because Oregon was still a land of a lot of small farms, very relatively little agribusiness, and there was land was cheaper than it would be in other places like California. And when you went down the Willamette Valley, you still had a sense of community compared to going down the Central Valley in California, where it's completely like you might as well be in a factory. It's only it's outside factory. But things are changing here in Oregon, and I've talked to farmers in the Willamette Valley who are really concerned because large multinational corporations are now buying up farmland in the Willamette Valley, and it's some of the most fertile, excellent land in the world, and they're going to plant filbert orchards or commercial blueberries or other things that are really not good for the land and not good for the communities, and they're wiping out the small farmers. So I'm feeling a little less optimistic than I was a few years ago that a handful of small farmers with a great vision of sustainability and the importance of being responsible to local communities is going to change the world. I'm wondering, do you have a sense of how to counteract the forces that are now hitting Oregon that hit the Midwest many, many years ago? What can we do to turn that around?
Well, first, let me just mention that when you say Willamette Valley, one of my degrees is from Oregon State University. So I also remember, you know, the memories of being able to go out and be in some of the small cities around the area and to see some of what you described. You know, Barbara, you raise an excellent question. And I think the first thing is we didn't get into this overnight. We're not going to get out overnight. In my career, part of what I tried to do initially was to see if we couldn't work with some of the larger companies that are out there. Yeah, but there is so much money now tied up into the modern food system, and they have to report in terms of their quarterly earnings that we didn't have much success doing that. And I thought, well, you know, maybe we can get the universities to be more responsive. But part of the challenge with the universities, and Oregon State is an excellent one, Michigan State as well, is they still operate on this model that say we need more food. And so the challenges for them are still very vertical, very specialized within their areas of discipline. And one of the primary motivators for this book was to say, you know what, we as consumers need to step back and say, what do we decide is acceptable? I mean, are we happy with the way things are going right now? Do we want a food system that continues to reward just quantity over nutrition? Do we want to just ignore that it's not happening? That's where the emphasis for that change is going to have to happen. And bringing in that connection back to what is happening at the local level, I think is critically important. But it's also important to recognize no matter what we do individually, that always results in collective outcomes. It may take time. It may not happen as quickly as we'd like to. But I don't see any other way around that. But we can chip away at some of this. For example, you know, these big farms, especially on the animal side and also on the monoculture sides, they can take advantage now of practices within the farm laws that might exempt them from the Clean Water Act. Why that is the case, it's just, I think, in part because we haven't been paying attention to what is happening there, and we tend to just to let it go. And so you then get to see some of that runoff in that. We haven't valued within a market economy the value of having diversity of land that's out there. It's not that way in the rest of the world. If you travel Western Europe, they still value a lot of smaller farms, and they value it not just for what it produces, but for its beauty and for what it brings in terms of being able to enjoy going out and driving through that area. So, but the way we've set it up now, and you'll hear this in the dialogue, when we talk about markets, we tend to say, well, just let the free markets handle it. Well, first, there are no free markets. I mean, markets are being driven by factors that we value and are major, and those become the prices. And if we decide, for example, that having a large monoculture field of blueberries is reducing other habitat that we need for other species, and we make that, eventually that gets factored into what the markets is. If we don't do anything, then it just goes.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on Cable Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking with Kevin Walker, author of The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More. And now we're going to talk with John about why KBOO is actually, I think, one of the great bulwarks against this market economy hegemony of large factors trying to push out the smaller guys. But KBOO is standing up against this, and you can help us do that right now by calling 877-500-5266 and becoming a member of KBOO.
Thank you, Barbara. Yeah, this is the first day of our membership drive for the spring, and we're looking for a great start, and your help with that will be by calling 877-500-5266 and making a donation to KBOO. Now, you're listening to Locus Focus, and you're listening to it today on the air because thousands of people started their memberships throughout last year's drive. It adds up. We build upon each other. We are always on the shoulders of our ancestors, so to speak. And we need to never forget that we are a community that depends and is interrelated and interconnected. And no better conversation about that than how we understand our relationship to food. And Kevin Walker is Barbara's guest, and he's the author of The Grand Food Bargain, The Mindless Drive for More, and that book is available to you as a thank you gift if you make a donation to KBOO of $60, and you can do that by calling 877-500-5266. You can spread that out over the year of $5 a month or a one-time gift of $60, and then that book will be offered to you as a thank you gift by calling 877-500-5266. Barbara Bernstein's show, Locus Focus, an incredibly important show. To talk about our earth and our relationship to earth and food.
Well, I was thinking as you're talking, John, about how I started at KBOO, and actually I started as the membership coordinator many, many years ago, back when the computer that digested all of our data about our membership was, you know, filled a room and wasn't nearly as efficient as a MacBook Mini today. At that time, I think we had about 3,000 members. It was between 2,000 and 3,000 members. And that was back in 1978. I'm not sure how many members we have now, but considering how much Portland has grown, I don't think our membership has grown by the same factor. And I think we should, during this pledge drive, really see ways to reach out and to get a larger percentage of Portlanders, particularly all these new people who've moved here, who don't know what Portland's about. And you don't find out what Portland's about until you start listening to KBOO. And then you're hearing local radio, because we're really the only really local radio station on the air. Well, and there's a jazz station that I think is pretty local too. But by and large, most of what you hear on the airwaves in Portland and around the country is the same homogenized stuff, whether it's, you know, supposed public radio or whether it's commercial radio. KBOO is the unique voice of Portland. And if you tune into us, you really get a sense of what makes Portland very special, why you moved here, or why you've stayed here all your life, and what the connections are to community. We are community radio, and you can become part of that community by calling right now at 877-500-5266. You can go online if you prefer to do it that way. If you're shy on the phone or you're at work right now, you can go to kboo.fm and click on donate, and you become a member. And I would say, John, don't you think it transforms your life when you become a member of KBOO?
It does transform your life. I think it makes us become more human, because we are making decisions as individuals and as communities rather than as corporations. And as I was hearing your interview with Kevin and the great colossal Grand Food Bargain, which was not a very good bargain, and all factory farming and all of that kind of thing, monoculture, that simply does not fit what it means to be human in relationship with Earth and in relationship with our food and with one another. And so KBOO is kind of an alternative to this mass media factory farming kind of thing. People deciding, as Kevin mentioned, it's up to us to chip away as we can to this massive robotization of humanity.
Well, you know, these are really hard times that we're living in, which I could maybe say for most of my life has been hard, but I don't think any period of history in my memory has been as confrontational and despairing as the Trump administration. And yet, I think one of the things that's kept a lot of us going is media that penetrates through the myths and the lies and the distortions and the hatred that is being promulgated at the national level. KBOO is a way for you to connect with people who share your values. And it's not just people on the left. I think that KBOO actually reaches out potentially to a lot more people than people who would identify as being politically progressive. People who really care about humanity and people who really care about having connections with other people. And that's what KBOO is really about. We are about connecting. And you can see that in the wide array of programming we do. We don't just do public affairs. We do an amazing amount of music from many, many different cultures. We do radio theater. We do a lot of different kinds of art shows. We do a lot of different kinds of culture shows and a lot of different communities that speak on KBOO and have a real footing in KBOO. And that's because of you. And I think our listeners also represent that diversity. So join us right now by calling 877-500-5266 and become a member. You can also go online to kboo.fm and become a member that way.
And we'll give it back to you, Barbara, with your fascinating interview with Kevin Walker. And if you give a $60 gift now, he will offer that as a thank you gift, the grand food bargain, and the mindless drive for more. One more time with that phone number, 877-500-5266.
Thanks, John. And we'll talk in a little bit. We're talking this morning with Kevin Walker, author of The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More. Kevin, let's go to the beginning of the book, since we started the show by talking about what's at the end of the book. And you were in the Kalahari Desert in Africa following a bushman who was hunting ostrich eggs. And I want you to tell that story and how that reflects on the great difference between the kind of food relationship we had before the grand food bargain was struck and those of us who are dependent on supermarkets and fast food joints have now with our food.
Sure. So along with a friend of mine, we found ourselves in the middle of the Kalahari Desert. No signs of civilization in any direction. And our only lifeline out spoke no English. And we had put ourselves into that situation because we wanted to accompany him in his search for food. And as you mentioned, this was a bushman, part of the Sun people. As the morning rolled on, he pointed out things to us off in the distance that we couldn't see because he was so acute of being able to observe nature in a way that we had no comprehension of. But at some point, he picked up the tracks of what turned out to be an ostrich. And as we followed him, that led to a clutch of eggs down beneath a bush. But what happened next went against the very core of our westernized approach to food. He knelt down, he studied these eggs, he selected a single egg, and an ostrich egg can weigh between 3 and 5 pounds, and he picked it up and cradled it in his hand, and then he stepped away. While he was doing this, my friend and I were preparing to help him carry back the other eggs, and I had removed my day pack to make space so that we could do that. And though we couldn't talk, we gestured to him our intention to help him carry these back to his community. And his response was, he just walked away. And choosing to turn down free food in a desolate environment that radiated scarcity made absolutely no sense. I mean, imagine if we go into a supermarket and we're strolling down the aisle, and behind the refrigerated display glass doors are pallets of eggs, and a sign says 2 for 1. Even if eggs aren't on our list, we're likely to take those. And we never think about how our actions affect the total supply of eggs, of where they come from, of what that might mean for others, and so forth. We just pick it up, we go, we never give it a second thought. Had he gone along with what we wanted, had we carried back all of those eggs, I don't know that I would have remembered that experience. But the fact that he didn't piqued my curiosity and my understanding. It was probably the best lesson I've ever seen on sustainability.
Well,
continue.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Because it turns out that what they understood, because the Sun people had lived there for 20,000 years, is that they are tied to forces beyond themselves, and that they had to learn to live in harmony with those forces, and they did so successfully. They did so successfully until another group of people settled in, and they basically took away their way of life, and that disappeared.
I'm kind of curious how these people are sustaining themselves in the face that much of Africa is now tied to the Grand Food Bargain as well as the United States.
Are you referring to Africa as a whole or to the Sun people?
I'm talking to Africa as a whole, or that section of Africa, because I know that Africa, there's this major food plantations, farming plantations, and major agribusiness interests in Africa. So I'm kind of curious how the Sun people have maintained this relationship to a sustainable balance in their own environment.
Well, they haven't. They haven't, because what happened was... the settlers moved in, and the first thing they did is the land rights disappeared. So the bushmen, they lived by migrating from one place to the other based on climate and temperature. All of that had gone. There were some stores of water that were available. Those had been pumped out. They were relocated to communities, and they ended up becoming dependent on others around them. So their lifestyle was taken away. Now, if you think about Africa as a whole, unlike the United States, where we produce more food than we consume, and therefore we can export more food, Africa as a whole is a net importer of food. And what is happening in Africa is not dissimilar than what you described, Barbara, in the Willamette Valley, of others coming in and buying up large tracts of land. And there has been kind of this rush to come in and to seize on large tracts of land, and often that comes with the water rights associated with it. And some of that has been driven by countries who look ahead and say, we don't have the land base and the water resources that we need to sustain our own people. So they have moved in and they've entered into either long-term contracts or other arrangements, much of which is not known, it's not revealed to do that. And that's going to accelerate our return to scarcity. And in fact, Barbara, I would just add, if you look around, there are a lot of examples of that happening right now, including what's happening at our own border, including Venezuela, including in Syria. Food still drives well-being to an extent that we don't fully recognize or pay attention to.
Well, actually, one of the disturbing things for me about Africa is one of the main countries that's buying up all this farmland is China. Now, China has a huge land base, but it seems like they're not thinking about their own. There's problems with their land base, and I'm not sure if this is an area that you're real familiar with, but it does seem like these are one of the highest contradictions that we need to look at.
I am familiar with China. I've been in China twice. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but if you look at land per person, arable land per person. My memory, and I could be wrong on this, seems to be it is about 20% of what's available in the U.S. per person. So you have that. Then the other thing you have is not just land, but where is the location of the water that's out there? And that's the other thing they have. So they have a very, very serious problem of having enough land. And then the other thing that happens with it, it's not just land and water, it's what are you doing with nature and the environment. And quite candidly, this is my opinion, part of the advancement in China has come at the extent of compromising their own environment. And that has a cumulative effect with it. And so they are one of the countries that have reached out to others. There are a couple of other countries in Asia and in the Middle East that have done so as well. They have the money that does it. Part of that, and bring this back to the United States, is we've never prioritized land. We lose the equivalent of some 3,200 football fields of farmland every day. And we've never prioritized where does producing food and the land we require fit into that mix. So, and that's because when we started out as a nation, we had more land, more water, better climate, and eventually petroleum than any other country on Earth. I mean, we were the Saudi Arabia of land, if you will. We thought we could never run out. And we've never changed. We've never moved off of that. And some of our best farmland is now, on supporting homes. And it's now in populations. And so what's happened over time is we've just continued to move farmland further and further away, and we've relied on our ability to use petroleum to bring that food to us. So we've taken away one finite resource, land, and we said, well, we'll compensate by using more of another finite resource. And that's a story that we do quite often, and we never think about what that means longer term.
Well, one last point. I'm thinking about the contradiction of here in the Northwest, we grow a lot of apples, particularly Washington State's quite famous for them. So Washington State exports its apples to China. China exports its apples to the Northwest and to the rest of the United States. What sense does that make?
It all comes down to the way the markets are set up that makes that possible. I don't know the specific of this particular arrangement, but I can easily see that apples coming out of the United States and coming from the Northwest have a different value associated with them. And Chinese consumers want that. And the fact that they come from, a prime real estate in the world as far as growing apples carries a value with it. Apples coming into the U.S., I don't know where those are flowing. I can see some of those might be going into juices and other things like that. They may not have the value. They may be a source of bringing them in a lot cheaper. Because to the extent that those are picked by hand, labor is a lot cheaper over in China. In fact, we're seeing that with meat as well.
Well, actually, I'm thinking about how I eat all the apples I eat are grown in the Northwest. I make a point of that. And they are amazing apples, much better than the apples I grew up with in New England. And I wonder how, as a final thought, we can encourage people to appreciate the flavors of the local food around them, or if there is no local food around them, to find some ways to bring that back.
Yeah, I think you've touched on a key point. One of the things that happens when food is just a transaction, when it's just about satisfying taste, and that taste is driven by sugars, fats, and salts, is to step back and say, let's turn mindless into mindfulness. Let's cultivate appreciation. And instead of just biting into an apple, just to take a moment and study it and look at it, and think about there's a story behind that apple. That apple came from somewhere. That apple has significance beyond just satisfying our taste at that moment in time. And that's part of being able to see and return to the value that associated with food. And when we can do that, when we can break the bondage that food is just about price and it's just about quantity, it opens the door to be able to explore these other dimensions of food that have always been there and that have always been important. Sometimes when I sit down to eat and it's a plate full of food, I'll take a moment just to think about, that kale may not be that appetizing at that moment, but that came from somewhere. And there's a taste and texture that's associated with that that's pleasurable. You don't get that when you break open a Hostess Twinkie. It satisfies, your taste buds and your desire for fat and sugar at that moment, but it doesn't have the significance that it carries with us. That's what we need to return to.
Well, Kevin, I want to thank you very much for joining us this morning and being part of our pledge drive. And thanks for writing the book, and good luck with all your future endeavors.
All right. Thank you very much, Barbara. It's a pleasure being with you.
Sure. Well, we've been talking today with Kevin Walker, who's the author of The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More. Now we're going to talk with John, and we're going to find out about the mindful drive for more members of KABU.
Thanks, Barbara. That I was just going to lead with that quote. I wrote it down when he said, let's turn mindlessness into mindfulness. And that really is what we seek to be about here at Community Radio, KBLO, because there is something here that speaks to you. We want to continue speaking to you. And how that's going to happen is that if you help us, because it's run by donations. This radio station is run by contributions, by volunteer support, by volunteers offering their gifts to this radio station to get important programs like Locus Focus. 877-500-5266 is the phone number to call. asking you to call that number right now and support KBOO as our first day of our spring fund drive. That's 877-500-5266. And with your contribution of $60 or more, you will receive as a thank you gift Kevin Walker's book, The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More. So again, you can give online at kboo.fm or call toll-free 877-500-5266.
And actually, this is a transformational act to do, to become a member of KBOO, because when you do, you join this community of not just like-minded people. There's a lot of like-minded people, but there's a lot of people who are not totally agreeing about everything, but agree about the fact that we need community and the strength of community. And I think that one of the things that has made Portland a place I wanted to stay in for, it's pushing on 50 years now, is because KBOO has hardwired in the sense of community in Portland. And even though maybe a majority of Portlanders don't listen to KBOO and aren't familiar with us, there's enough of us that do and have a sense of this identity that has really driven Portland to become a much more far-thinking, progressive, and also locally oriented small size city, even as it's almost twice as big now as it was when I moved here. So there's something really important about community radio, and I think that you only really connect to that importance and that strength when you call 877-500-5266 and become a member, or you can go online at kboo.fm and join that way, and you will be becoming part of this. I see this image of a nebula out in the, you know, the outer reaches of the universe, just kind of throbbing with energy and all kinds of creativity and the beginnings of new galaxies. And that's kind of what KBOO is like when you join. And not only that, you can get a copy of the book we've been talking about for the last hour, The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More by Kevin Walker, and get a connection with your food as well as the food for thought, which is what KBOO provides.
You know, and there are so many ways that we can spend our dollars, but only one way. It keeps us informed, connected, and entertained with great news, talk, music, and culture 24/7. And we do that by your support here at KBOO of 877-500-5266. Sometimes we can take community radio and the voices here for granted and think, well, it's always going to be here, and we just kind of listen along. But we're asking you to take a step up and be a part of this movement towards being human, as I call it, and participate in making our world a sustainable place. Even though the odds and the opposition seem so huge, there are people really want, I believe, to do the right thing, to work for justice, to work for peace, to be sustainable, to eat healthy, to leave something for our descendants. And KBOO Radio really has a commitment to that. 877-500-5266 is a way you can call and make your commitment. Stand up for what you believe in. 877-500-5266. KBOO is the phone number, or you can go to kboo.fm. And if you offer a gift of, say, $10 a month, $120 a year, that will go a long way to help keep programs like Locus Focus and other programs that you heard this morning, like the Old Mole Variety Hour or More Talk Radio or Democracy Now! Or coming up at 11, First Voices Radio. Important programming from a number of voices. That number again is 877-500-5266.
And in fact, $10 a month is what I've been giving to KBOO for a long time, since I've been able to afford to do that. And it's just becomes one of these things that I know this is one of the organizations in the community that I really, really care about. It's not just that I do a show here every week, but I listen to the station a lot. And I feel like I've learned so much, whether it's about public affairs and what's going on in the world, or it's about interpersonal stuff, or whether it's hearing and learning about amazing music. KBOO is a light shining onto many, many parts of the world. And you can broaden your vision. You can have that light shine back on you when you call 877-500-5266. Become a member, or go online at kboo.fm and become a member that way too.
And again, one final offer for this important book that Barbara's guest, Kevin Walker, has written called The Grand Food Bargain. You can get The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More, a very important book about food and our relationship to it. Call 877-500-5266 for a donation of $60. You'll get that as a thank you gift. So please call us, 877-500-5266.
Thanks a lot, John. It's been good talking with you today. And today we've been talking with Kevin Walker, who's author of The Grand Food Bargain and The Mindless Drive for More. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, we're going to talk with Bob Quinn and Liz Carlisle, co-authors of another book about the food system called Grain by Grain. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Milton Nascimento and Wayne Shorter, a tune called The Miracle of the Fishes. Thanks for listening.
Eu vejo esses peixes e vou de coração. Eu vejo essas matas e vou de coração. A natureza. Falam colorido de crianças coloridas, de um gênio televisor. E no andor de nossos novos santos, um sinal de velhos tempos. Morte, morte, morte ao amor. Eles não falam do mar e dos peixes, nem deixam ver a moça pura canção, nem ver nascer a flor, nem ver nascer o sol. Eu apenas sou uma mais a falar.